Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back, Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr, North Dakota Corn Council studio, and in the last 4 minutes, Doug and I have been arm wrestling over deer tag.
Yeah,
no, just yeah. They just, and I'm sure a lot of people out there have been continuing the discussion of managing the herd. Does come down to CRP, I guess. More public lands,
really. And that's the thing, Mick. Why I so. You know, I said it at the beginning, I'm going to say it in the middle, I'm going to say it at the end. Why I appreciate having these conversations with you, because there's farmers and ranchers that are deer hunters, mm-hmm. and there's deer hunters that are listening, and we had 30 people at the Emden Advisory Board meeting. Now, again, having 30 people in Emden, that's a good crowd. You know, that's we had less people. I think Stanley had 15. Okay. So it's important to be able to get this over the airwaves so many more people can hear what we're saying. They might not be happy, but they can understand this is why you have 64,000 deer tags and you have 90,000 competing for those deer tags and why so many people don't get a deer tag.
Yeah.
And it comes back to, now, one of the things that I mentioned is you go back 15 years ago and we had 140,000 deer tags in North Dakota, but we had a little under 4 million acres of CRP. I can go back to the 1980s with you and we'd talk about this. You know, if we wanted to get into the discussion, was CRP good for rural North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota? That's not the point of the discussion. I'm just bringing out the fact is that when we had that many deer tags, we had four times as much CRP. When we were harvesting 900,000 pheasants in North Dakota, we had twice as much CRP as we have now. Mm-hmm. We, from a game and fish point of view, never have, never can, and never will be highly competitive against rental rates. I think I can speak for everybody in game and fish that's...
Well, it's apples and oranges.
It's almost irresponsible, though. Uh-huh. You know, really. I mean, when you if you have somebody talking about how high the price of their grocery bill is, well, driving up rates, if the government would pay more per acre for CRP than cash rental, and people are stopping producing potatoes and wheat and durum and soybeans so that they can put it in CRP, I don't think anybody would say that would be logical and rational.
Or wise. Yeah.
Right. So that brings you back down to the base level of having CRP and habitat programs. You talk with Mark Halverson and talking about trying to prevent erosion and mm-hmm. having cover crops. And that's, you know, the fundamental of doing things in a more conservation-minded way. You have landowners and farmers that say, you know what? If you got a program that can leave that little buffer strip along that creek, I'm all about that.
And plant brassicas that deer love to eat.
Yeah. And I think one of the things with modern conservation is it's evolved from 1986, where you just say, let's put 10 quarters in CRP. And now we're realizing, okay, we need to have grazing land and hay land and pasture land. We need to have, grains and row crops along the way. And if we can farm the best and conserve the rest, that's going to be a more balanced situation than it was in the past. And that's why private lands programs and private lands biologists become even more important, because they can sit down with that farmer and rancher and say, hey, here's a program that's going to work. So we don't have the volume of acres that we had 15 years ago, but we probably have higher quality, because we learned that just putting something to grass and leaving it there for 10 years, well, you don't have the forage quality, you don't have the grassland habitat, production is production. So we've got the maintenance programs that work. So it's mm-hmm. it's better than it was in terms of quality, but for what people would like to have for habitat, for complete and total acreages, it's not there, and it likely probably never will be there, Mick.
Sure. Well, farmers' reluctance to put land into CRP, or their willingness to put CRP, land into CRP, is because corn was $2 a bushel, and now it's 6.5. And the soybeans were $4, but now they're $14. But it's not all about farmers' reluctance to put land into CRP. There's also blue tongue, chronic wasting disease, EHD. There's a lot of things that decimated the deer herd.
Absolutely. And you could also say, you know, if we went back 15 years ago, from a game and fish standpoint, we were issuing that many tags because we needed to knock the deer herd down. You know, there's
like when there's a rabbit population explosion, suddenly there is a disease that wipes out 80% of them.
Yeah.
And I guess you're trying to prevent deer decimation.
Yeah. And trying to prevent deer depredation. Uh-huh. Because as many hunters loved, you know, having 5 or 10 deer tags in their back pocket, you'd go to January and February and a legislative session would be going on. And we were getting an earful from the legislators saying, I've got constituents that have deer in their alfalfa and their silage, and they're causing thousands of dollars in damages. Game and fish, you need to shoot more deer. Mm-hmm. So part of it was by design. I don't know if anybody could say, hey, you know, right now we're issuing like 64,000 deer tags. If our target would be around 80,000 deer tags, what exactly that number would be? We'd like to have more deer tags available. And part of that, why we didn't this year, is exactly what you said. We had an epizootic hemorrhagic disease, a blue tongue, an EHD disease in central and western North Dakota in 2021 that resulted in thousands of dead deer.
And you returned tags.
We returned tags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, so when you take a, you know, a Friday afternoon 15-minute deer discussion, you can understand what we're trying to cram into 15 minutes are topics and issues that are literally decades and years in the making. And my biggest point on a Friday afternoon, Mick, is for people to appreciate and understand and be better informed as to, okay, you didn't get a deer tag. There's a lot of different factors that go into place. You didn't get a muzzleloader tag. Hey, you're not alone. This is why that it works that way. You know, it's not something that is ever going to be resolved, but it's something that we continue to work on in trying to be equitable, and that archery tags are unlimited. We've been looking at, we looked really closely in 2015 at a scenario where a hunter in North Dakota would not be able to get a rifle tag, a muzzleloader tag, and an archery tag. Well, we looked at it, and the sheer percentage of people that do that is really small.
Oh, sure.
But when they get
time on their hands.
Yeah, but when they get it, when they're lucky enough to get that, everybody else says, hey, I didn't draw a rifle tag. I'm not an archery hunter, and I'm not a muzzleloader hunter, but that guy over there just has 3 tags. I have 0 tags. Again, it's situations that we look at, but, you know, it's probably not as big of a deal as what each individual would make it out to be. When you think of when somebody says, gosh, that guy drew a moose tag 5 years ago. He drew an elk tag 10 years ago, and now he drew a bighorn sheep tag. I think that's happened 5 times in 40 years. That I think there's less than a dozen people out of, you know, 700,000 people in North Dakota that have drawn a moose, elk, and a bighorn sheep tag. So if you change that, well, hey, those 12 people, it's once in a lifetime. They're never going to be able to do that again.
Yeah.
You know, when you ask the questions and learn more about it, you can better understand where we're at, Mick.
Equitable and fair. Managing the herd.
Trying to, man. Yeah, trying to, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, for the folks out there who have not been able to get a tag, can't go whether it's muzzleloader, archery, or the deer gun season, I've got the solution for you.
What's that?
Go fishing, because, man, we're making ice.
You are the man. You just took 20 minutes of frustration, and you fixed it.
Well, good.
Go ice fishing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Outdoors is wide open.
Snag a deer walleye.
Yeah, there you go. and that's the beauty of the outdoors. And, it, you know, if you go backwards, we don't limit. You can go out and shoot ducks. We have a daily limit. You can go out and shoot pheasants. You're not limited to, you know, so there's opportunities. One of the biggest things, you know, here on the 2nd of December is we're making good ice, but we've had some bad ice. We talked about this last week a little bit. I want to make sure that people get outdoors, but I want to make sure that they're carrying a spud bar, an ice chisel. And if you pound that thing down a couple times and it breaks through, I'm going to suggest that's as far as you want to go.
Yeah.
You know, you get 2-3 inches of ice, you're going to be okay there. But this is not the time to be going, hey, I'm going to be the first guy out there with an ATV. No. It's not a race to see who can get out there first. It's a race to see who can be out there safely. Yeah, there's safe ice out there, but you got to be very, very cautious, Mick.
Because the fish don't care.
No. And they're still going to be there.
Yep, for sure. All right, Doug Lear, North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outreach Biologist. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Yes, you too as well, Mick. Thanks, my friend.
Talk
my friend.
To you next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Hey, we'll see you folks Monday. This is Farm Talk.